Hi, everybody. This is Scott Callon. Thank you so much for joining today. We're really grateful for your time. I'm here also with Dan Morisaku, who is Senior Director in Finance and our Head of Global IR. I'll be working off of a presentation that's on our website entitled FY21 to February 2021 Q1 Corporate Presentation. So let's get into it. Turning to page two, this is an incredibly difficult time in the world. We express our deepest condolences to all of those going through this incredibly difficult period from COVID. And on top of that, as you know, in Japan, there's been just an enormous amount of destruction, particularly in the South. We wish our deepest condolences to all of those affected globally, and we hope that we can all get through this as soon as possible. Let's go on to the presentation itself. Page 8 is the Q1 summary. This continues to be a very low visibility earnings environment. And a very difficult period. Despite that, as you can see on the far left, despite everything that's going on with COVID, we continue to deliver stock earnings, meaning effectively fixed earnings, that are well above our fixed expenses. That's the point. That's why we have these secure revenue streams. So we're running at 200% of our fixed expenses, and in effect, we're structurally profitable. We use a new phrase in the middle of the pie graph called cash earnings. So it's just a way to communicate to you what we think is the key performance indicator of the firm. You know, we run the firm for profitability, high returns for our shareholders, for growth. And as part of that, we have an overwhelming focus on cash. I mean, it is not very interesting to generate accounting profitability without cash that comes with it. So cash earnings is a key, we think, tracker of our profitability. It's gross profits plus fixed asset gains on sales, which won't show up in gross profits because they're in the fixed asset category, plus reversal out of depreciation expenses and non-cash. So that's what we're focused on growing. You can turn to the right-hand side. You can see stock earnings continue to be relatively strong, we say robust. We think given what's happening in the world, minus 15% year-on-year is actually relatively good given the economic sensitivities that are embedded in our businesses. As you can see, SRE, sustainable real estate, is down the most. That's primarily down 800 million yen. That's primarily variable rents down in the hotel sector, which, as you know, has just been absolutely gut-punched. Asset management is down a little bit. That's also hotel links, decrease in performance fees in our hotel REIT, and clean energy, which is indifferent to what's going on in the world, is doing, you know, very well. We revised up on the far left. You can see our full-year forecast, the bottom end of the range. We kept the top end in where it is. As I said earlier, it's a very low visibility earnings environment. You know, arguably, this is a cautious upward revision. That's exactly correct. If things go well, we'll just keep on revising upward through the year. But it's just so hard to know with COVID. You know, things that can go wrong, so we've chosen to be conservative. Ichigo Owners, a business we set up 3 years ago, March 2017, is delivering enormously well. That's proven to be a very, very effective, diversifying, and you know, powerful in terms of ability to deliver earnings, even with this environment. Overwhelming focus of our flow earnings in the quarter come out of Ichigo Owners, and we're very confident there's more to come. And I touched on clean energy. That's going just fine. Turn to page 9. Touch on some of the COVID-19 impacts. What's so distinctive of COVID is how the sectoral impacts can overwhelmingly be so different. So hotels, anything linked to kind of travel, entertainment, has been very, very difficult. So on the asset management side, minimal impact. I'm looking down at the bottom half of the page. Minimal impact on offices, significant impact on hotels in terms of for the operators themselves, for us in terms of performance-based AMP fees that would link to rental income. And Ichigo Green, the solar power yieldco, has really no impact at all. In sustainable real estate, very much, again, a diverse story. Decrease in hotel and retail rental income, minimal impact on the other asset types. There's a lot of discussion about what's happening with the future of offices. I can tell you emphatically, offices today, we're experiencing effectively no impact. And that's true in residential. So the tenants are paying. The worst case scenarios that we had to think through are not coming to through, and that's a real positive. Just to let you know, on the hotels, about 50% of our rents are fixed, 50% are variable, so the variable rents are effectively gone. And if this continues for an ongoing basis, the fixed rents are going to be eroded too, as operators lose the ability to pay them. At the moment, though, we're getting payments through. We are working with our tenants on a case-by-case basis to support them. Sorry, I wrote supporting tenants on a case-by-case basis. It's not to imply we're only supporting certain tenants. We are working on a case-by-case basis with all of our tenants. On the asset, in terms of asset sales themselves, there is significant market stress in the sense that, and we said this 3 months ago, buyers fear the worst and price in the worst. Sellers are not willing to sell at the worst case scenario because they think COVID is going to be resolved through treatment and or vaccine sometime in the next kind of, you know, everybody has their own view, 6 months, 12 months, 24 months. So you know, certain of the markets are fairly locked. Residential is doing just fine, though. Japan has done a very good job of protecting the population, workers, wages. The tenants are all paying their rent. So this is a market that continues to be very, very active. And it's a preferred. It's a flight to safety within real estate. So the residential asset market is doing just fine. And you have kind of gaps, particularly in the case of hotels, no one really knows what the NOI is, so you can't figure out what the cap rate is. And in the case of office, they're performing very well. And we believe, and we're talking to our tenants about this, we see no reason to believe that there's a dramatic shift in tenant desire to be in our offices, which are well-located, relatively smaller offices. So there is a view and a debate going on as to what happens with office demand going forward. It's certainly a possibility that large offices get shrunk down. It's certainly a possibility that the demand for our assets, which are tend to be smaller, well located and smaller, shrink down. There's also the opposite possibility, which is that tenants migrate from large offices to small offices, and we benefit from it. And I touched on clean energy before. That's doing just fine. Turning to page 10, we're doing everything we can to support our tenants through this. We work for our tenants, and so we established a task force. We're doing quite a bit of work across the board. If you note on the page, policy research, I mean, one of the challenges that tenants and individuals globally have had is you have these complicated government programs, and it's hard to know how you qualify and how you get through it. So that's something that we're doing. Our tenants are primarily SMEs. It's the ability for us to effectively generate some economies of scale in terms of the research we do in order to support them through this process. And we are already, you can see in the second half of the page, we're working on things that are important to our tenants. We, as you know, we always do and continue to do ongoing surveys of our tenants to understand their needs. And there's a brand new need called, how can we be safer in offices? So it's something we're working on. And it, you know, runs a spectrum of, you know, this, lots of small stuff too. Big or small, we want to hear from the tenants what they want, we want to deliver it. So, you know, they want better ventilation. They want less touching, meaning kind of contactless sinks and bathrooms, and also going into going into the building. You want to be able to get in without having to touch things. So this is something that is both ongoing work today and will continue to be ongoing work. And one of the advantages you have with smaller buildings is they're overwhelmingly, which is what we do, they're overwhelmingly one tenant per floor. So you have much less risk and much less tenant kind of insecurity around kind of, we got all these people running around the floor with us. We don't know if it's safe or not. So it's a real advantage. But delivering high integrity safety today and delivering kind of going forward, there's clearly a new standard. Everyone's familiar in Japan with earthquake standards. There's a new kind of ventilation standard that has emerged, and we're very involved with the engineers and working through delivering best-in-class performance in that space. Turning to page 11, tough environment. Stock earnings down 15%, flow earnings down 63%. That delivers year-on-year down plus more than 50% in both OP and net income and EPS. We had such a more severe scenario on the downside when we did our forecast in April when everything was going wrong in Japan and globally. So nonetheless, we've revised up the full year, but it's a very tough operating environment. And it's primarily on the flow side. So the stock earnings are coming through. The flow earnings, we generate, as you know, significant earnings when we improve assets and sell them at profits reflecting the value add. That's shrunk fairly substantially. It's almost entirely in residential at this point. Page 12, other segment earning details. Going through the bottom of the table on the bottom page, you can see asset management OP is down 36%. Sustainable real estate is down 64%. Clean energy is up 57%. Going to the top of the page, the asset management is primarily a decrease in hotel REIT base AM fees. I mean, hotels are just really stopped right now. There's nothing to be done. In sustainable real estate, you've got some decrease in hotel and retail rental income. It's overwhelmingly in the hotel space. Floor earnings are on track. We just had a monster first quarter last year, so that's a big year-on-year down. But, you know, that was to be expected. In clean energy, we have seven new plants online since the second half, since the end of the first half last year, and so you've got an increase in megawatts of 33%, and that delivers an increase in OP of plus 57. Page 13 shows the forecast upward revision. You know, a little bit of increase in stock earnings. So we discovered we were more conservative than we needed to be in terms of rental income. A more substantial increase in flow earnings, primarily. This is Ichigo Owners activity, which is going very, very well. And we also revised down some of our assumptions on financing and other expenses. So that ends up delivering OP plus 19% and net income plus 75% relative to the bottom of the range that we had before. We think these numbers are conservative, and of course, needless to say, it is our goal to deliver substantially higher earnings and to push up the earnings throughout the year. Given the forecast uncertainty, though, we're not making assumptions. We're going to take every day at a time. We're going to take every quarter at a time. So anyway, as of today, this is what our forecast looks like. Page 14. We started the year in April without giving a dividend forecast. We wanted, that was primarily, it was a lot of COVID uncertainty, but it was primarily we wanted to go talk to our investors and shareholders on what do you want us to do. Dividend, see if we can find distressed assets, buybacks. And, you know, investors have, there's a spectrum of views, but there was broad support for, look, if you have a progressive dividend policy, which says you always maintain a razor dividend, in a context of COVID, if you can keep your div, that's really powerful. And so we took that input, and so we effectively gave the forecast as of today. We're going to maintain the progressive dividend policy in the same dividend as we had last year. That policy does have a DOE target, dividend over equity target of paying at least 3% a year, and we're above that at 7 yen. Pages 16, 17 talk about our stock and flow earnings, our embedded foreign earnings. If we turn, if we go through to page, and this is something we do consistently, so I'll step through that. Turn to page 18. One of the distinguishing features of our business model is that we have third-party appraisers who tell us what our assets are worth, and we just consistently, overwhelmingly beat those numbers. So page 17, it implies that we have 56 billion yen of unrealized capital gains, unrealized gains in the balance sheet. Page 18 suggests that we're regularly at least 2x up, which means that the company is trading sub NAV. And you can see it's a very small and sad-looking graph on the far right because there's been a very substantial decrease in our buy-sell activity. And so this represents sell activity in the first quarter because of COVID. But even in this incredibly horrible market, we're delivering 2x of third-party appraisals in terms of the profitability of our assets. Page 19, again, reinforces the point that we're focused on cash generation, not accounting profitability, but real cash generated. On page 20, you can see the changes in our financing situation, and they're basically not changed. But COVID has been an important opportunity for us to verify we are strong credit. We're regarded as a strong credit. We borrow incredibly cheaply. We borrow well. We borrow long-term. Just a tiny bit decrease in the average maturity of our debt because we decided to go borrow more money just to give us more of a cash buffer in case we need it. It turns out we didn't really, but yeah, that's the reason for that. We're effectively a 10-year borrower at all in 90 basis points. Going to page 22, shows what we've done on the balance sheet for sustainable real estate. We were net sellers in the quarter, 6.4 billion yen, 100 yen to the dollar, so that's about $60 million. Focus on residential assets. Big drop off in our gross profit margin because the activity is overwhelmingly shifted to Ichigo owners. So we have a classic sustainable real estate value add business, and we have a shorter term, lighter value add, high turnover business, tighter margin, which is better for our clients. Tighter margin available is appropriate because we're doing less on the assets. It's less than a one-year hold. But owners, Ichigo Owners is a business we set up, as I said, 3 years ago. It's proven to be, you know, very powerful in this environment. It's been a strong diversifier and support for our earnings. You can see it was 43% of acquisitions last year. This year was actually 31%, but on the sales side. 99% of the assets to be sold in the quarter were out of owners. It is a business that we target to have a 10% margin against acquisition cost. It ran at a 15% margin in the quarter. Because high asset turnover, it's a very strong driver ROE, and we've got a lot more to come. So 15 billion yen of Tokyo residential assets in the acquisition pipeline. And the environment is suggesting that those kinds of assets continue to be in strong demand. Page 23 is a reminder in the asset manager business. We have three vehicles, an office REIT, hotel REIT, and a solar yieldco. We think they're all cheap. It's our job to prove that. We do have a shareholder meeting this Saturday, Ichigo office, where we'll be introducing a performance-fee-only fee structure. We think that's the right way. We should eat our own cooking. That's the right way to create alignment with the shareholders of the REITs. Not a great structure in the midst of COVID because what happens is when NOI comes in, we suffer from it. But we think, and when things go well, we benefit from it. So we think in the long run, this is the right way to demonstrate our capability and have credibility with our shareholders about that. Page 24 shows continuing growth in the clean energy business. We will be bringing on our first wind power plant this year. That business continues to grow quite well. And on page 25 is just a reminder that we have a J-League shareholder program for not only our own shareholders, but all of our two REITs and our Yorkdale shareholders. Right now, the J-League is not allowing fans into stadiums, which is a strong choice. But when we can once again gather in football stadiums or soccer stadiums on American, I guess I should say soccer, this is something that our shareholders across the board have really enjoyed. So those are my prepared remarks. Very happy to take any questions or input from all of you. Again, we're grateful for the opportunity to talk about our business and give you an update. So let's see, to take questions or comments, you press star then one. And if you want to cancel, you can press star then two. So anybody, star then one, we welcome your input. Woodrin?
Yeah, it's me. Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't know my line was open. Thanks.
No. It's opened it. Okay, you're good. Thank you.
Okay, fine. I'll start. Specifically on the offices, you alluded to it that you didn't really see any impact from your current tenants and willing to put in place anything they want with respect to air conditioning, et cetera, whatever. There have been some cautious people on offices. Today, there was an FT article about the fact that the Japanese office worker is starting to realize that commute is actually a waste of their time. And 60% actually do not want to return to the office. So there's a very tight vacancy level now at maybe 1.5 in the Tokyo area. First of all, if you were to take a longer term view, where could that vacancy move toward in your view? And obviously, what would you do to position yourself to shield yourself from any adverse rental impact? So that would be one. And on that comment that you would be willing to support your tenants, how does that work? Because if you were to choose to upgrade air conditioning, that could be a significant cost for relative to the value of the building. So how would you deal with that? So, well, the market, of course, comes first. And it would be interesting to hear as well a review on the mid-sized offices and the larger-sized offices, because the mid-sized have, well, if you have to believe their stocks price is sold off or are in a much worse situation than the larger offices, often occupied by blue-chip companies. A lot of questions.
Good. Thank you. Those are all really important questions. So let's go through them together. So look, we are hearing from our tenants two things, and they are very different. Meaning they're different. They're different statements, but they have a conclusion that's important. We are hearing from our tenants that they're going to decrease employee counts in their offices. That they think there is a shift towards working from home, remote work. That's real. And so our tenants are in fact planning to have 20% fewer, 30% fewer, 50% fewer, and in big cases, in the office. At the same time, they're not planning on cutting space. So one of the things that has happened, by the way, that's part of the drivers of demand for office in Japan, is that Japanese offices have a lot of workers per area. Another way of putting it, very little area per worker. And the current environment has raised concerns about whether this is a good idea. So just because they're going to be 30% or whatever number you want to choose, numbers of workers in the office, doesn't mean that office space decreases. And one of the things that's happened over the last couple of years that doesn't seem to have changed is companies are competing for talent by giving better offices, which generally means bigger offices, because workers don't want to be crammed in small spaces. So that's one reality. We're talking to our tenants. They're not telling us they're planning on giving space back. That may be linked in part to the third point that you made, is that mid-size offices, again, they have a safety and efficiency element, which is one tenant per floor, so that's a really good way to work. You're not carving up these big buildings, and again, we're in very good locations with smaller floor plates. So there may be some, you know, the bear case is office demand goes down a whole bunch. The bull case is that actually it doesn't necessarily go down, or maybe even goes up because people want more space for worker because of this, or they want more space because of kind of concerns about things like COVID, or they want more space for worker because of an ongoing trend to demand offer more space for worker in order to attract talent, or possibly the guys in the really big buildings that have, you know, a whole bunch of tenants on the floor with them. In certain cases, if you're a really big tenant, you have the entire floor, you're in a big building. They want to go to more satellite offices, and so they migrate to smaller buildings, and that would be a bullish case for us. But it's interesting. There is no question in the kind of global REIT market, including Japan, there's developed significant skepticism about future earning power. And so prices have come in. We are buyers. We see, you know, we have seen no changes. I say we're buyers, but we're actually not necessarily finding offices for sale at prices we want. So the public markets are trading differently from the private markets. But we see ongoing robust demand for offices. We see a change in tenant attitudes and appetite with respect to things like ventilation, things like safety. We're a very responsive owner. We spend a ton of time with our tenants understanding their needs. We think we're going to be able to continue to deliver against a new set of needs that have emerged. So, I mean, there's, you know, could vacancy go to 5%? Yes. And the markets are pricing that in. So the interesting question is, if vacancy doesn't go to 5%, then the pricing is wrong in the public markets. And, you know, we're not in the business predicting the future, but again, there are reasons we're hearing directly from the tenants. They're not planning on giving space back. And the other final important point is, when you release, and we still are, you release at higher rents because existing market rents are generally kind of 15 to 20% too high. So it continues to be the case, even in this environment, that if a tenant leaves, we can release at a higher price. So those are reasons to be to feel more comfortable about the security of the earnings stream attached to offices. But it's kind of, with respect to your second question on cost to retrofit, this is something we do in conversation with our tenants. We're not going to suddenly do a massive investment in a building primarily for existing tenants if we can't get a return out of it. If the building is empty, that implies you can do an uplift. It depends on the building. But we have uplifts not infrequently of 20 to 40% against existing rents, and you can put in CapEx in order to make it more attractive to drive higher rents. But outside of that, we don't see this environment as one where we have to wear kind of expensive costs. The final point I make, a little bit is a psychological, because you can do changes to HVAC, to ventilation systems to try to bring in more air, although they decrease operating efficiency, so they have more energy costs attached to it. Tenants do like windows that open. And the thing with the huge glass skyscrapers is that they don't have any windows to open. And so tenants tend to like, and the smaller buildings they do. I mean, it's just the way that they're designed. And so we do have tenant traffic that's like, we want to be in buildings more like yours. I'll stop there. Anything on that I should give more on?
Yeah, well, what I was wondering, does it, in this competition for talent, does it impact to some extent where companies want to establish themselves? So the demand for the different office districts in the Tokyo area, either within or outside? Do they look for different locations?
That's a really interesting question. I mean, one of the things that's just clearly happening This is a really, really hard environment for startups. And so Shibuya, which has been like this incredible startup hub, is, you know, because you have these non or barely profitable firms, and okay, financing is getting really, really tight. They tend to be very IT savvy, and so they're like, oh my goodness, this is really, really bad. Okay, maybe we need to return the space. So there has been a noticeable effect on demand for space in Shibuya, as an example. More broadly, I mean, you're hearing particularly from the very big companies that they want to do more kind of satellite offices, which could kind of imply a migration of and a diversification of their office footprint among locations. The one thing that's clearly not changing at all is if you're going to come to the office, it should be in a good location. So, and location and its transport is overwhelmingly rail and subway. So, you know, we're comfortable that the strategy that we have, which is to be very close to stations, continues to be one that fits tenant and corporate demand.
Yeah, so we're still looking at CBD areas, of course. Yeah, good. Thanks.
Go ahead.
Maybe one follow-up on the clean energy business.
Yeah.
What will that become eventually as part of the total activities of the company?
Hopefully
what
bigger.
Is the view? Yeah.
So, you know, we're working on environmental biomass, and I've talked about this before. One of the problems with, you know, the initial thought kind of, I think, up until really kind of 3 years ago was that biomass was great, that it was carbon neutral. It's not. It is actually negative for the planet. And to be very clear, we care a lot about the planet, and we're not going to do anything that is negative for the planet. So what we have chosen to do is a particular form of biomass, which we're working very hard on, which is entirely domestically sourced. So the problem with biomass is both that, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff of kind of ripping up trees in the southeastern United States and sending pellets across the world, which is very energy consumptive. It's also the case that, you know, okay, fine, the cycle is that you at some point you can regrow the tree, but having taken down the tree and its ability to you know, generate absorb CO2 and generate oxygen, you then kind of decrease that functionality and tip the world towards global warming and 50 and 80 years later, if you can actually end the cycle by regrowing the trees, that would be fine. But in the interim, you've contributed to the environmental crisis. So that's why biomass is problematic. So anyway, what we're doing is we're doing entirely domestic, and very specifically, we're the problem that Japanese forests have is that they're dying off because they're not being pruned. And so by pruning the forest, we avoid the tree die-off such that they continue to have the CO2 absorption and oxygen creation. So the biomass that we're planning on doing is emphatically a very good business, and to the point, since we will only do things that are environmentally sound, is very good for the planet. So that's where we're trying to take the business. Solar has gotten, they've gotten rid of the feed of tariffs, so the supernormal profits that were available are now gone. Wind is still interesting, except there's a lack of grid capacity, and so we have to see if grid capacity emerges. So if we can, the next stage for us on the production side is going to be environmentally sound domestic biomass. And we'll keep you up to date on that as to whether we can deliver. And if we do, its first earnings contribution, we think, is 2 years out.
Sorry, what did you say?
The first earnings contribution, if we deliver on kind of small-scale domestic biomass, will be 2 years out. So that's the time frame in terms of and the implication of that is within the next 12 months, we should be able to kind of have some granularity for all of you as, okay, this is viable, we're doing it, here's what the economics look like. Or not, but that's what we're spending most of our time right now in trying to build out a potential network of domestic ecological biomass plants.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll look into that in further detail. Thanks.
Thank you. I appreciate it. We can have Greg. We're going to open the line. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Next to the presentation.
Thanks.
My question is on the retail segment.
Yeah.
I guess it's more of a longer term question. At the moment, as you mentioned, I think you're focusing on the cash flow, helping the tenants with their cash flow, helping to make their life a bit easier, which I think is great. In the longer term, I was wondering what you are thinking, given the long term prospect for tourism in Japan. Is there a way to perhaps scale a little bit the hotel business? And have you had discussion with potentially clients who want to invest in private funds about starting to consider to look at future opportunities in either a good location or succession opportunities to make the hotel business bigger longer term, private fund, REIT? I'm interested in your thoughts there. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, this is an important topic. Look, we are bringing online. In fact, you can see in the report that we put 4 billion yen plus into hotels in the quarter, and the majority of that is our new not hotel in Sapporo, and we're bringing on another not hotel in Hiroshima. It's also about the same size this year. Look, the hotel business is currently utterly disastrously terrible, and so we just that's the grim reality. It's a good thing the hotels are only a quarter of our assets. In the longer term, Japan, as you know, is significantly underpenetrated in terms of tourism. One, two, the growth, particularly in Asia, of incomes is a significant driver of tourism growth, and Japan is an extraordinarily popular destination for the Asian tourists, and also globally. Two, and three, the Japanese hotel business is a distinct underperformer, delivering kind of a quality relative to cost. It's bizarre. I mean, the Japanese have the best restaurants on the planet, arguably, and they certainly don't have the best hotels on the planet. So there's this massive unmet need that we're trying to fill. The key question, so do we want to do more? Yes. Do we want to do more given that we don't quite know what in the world is happening next month or 3 months, and when the treatment is coming and when the vaccines are coming? I mean, everything has a price, but it's something that it's a very difficult business decision. And the last thing, Greg, I'd point out is that operators are kind of not quite falling over yet. We probably need another kind of 3 to 6 months of pain to start seeing a significant shakeout. We expect there are going to be opportunities, and we're going to have to make a call at that point in time about what to do. The advantage we do have, the knot is primarily about a branding and service offer. Prepara, our AI-based hotel revenue optimization management system is also proving to be pretty powerful, and we're thinking we can deploy that across the board. So we think we're advantaged in hotels. It's just that it's generating absolutely no income right now. So hard to own, hard to borrow against. We're going to have to try to solve that problem either with the kind of absolute rock bottom pricing, or kind of an unwillingness, probably with government support, to get kind of debt at reasonable prices and reasonable duration in order to kind of be able to ride through. At some point, we come out of COVID. We just don't know, as you know. None of us know. Is it 6 months? Is it 12 months? Is it 24 months? Is it 36 months? Probably something in that range. Anything I can add to that?
Just maybe a follow-up is, would you, we've seen the success, like, that funds like Blackstone have had in other asset classes with having, you know, what they call dry powder with, you know, money on call. As you know well, it, you know, takes quite a bit of time to raise funds for a new fund. Or so, I mean, would you consider having that kind of structure where you have, you know, the money on call and you're able to kind of pull the trigger on hospitality over the next, you know, 12 to 18 months? So in something which is less direct kind of value add for Ichigo, but more of a larger opportunistic fund?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, the honest answer is we haven't done that in a while. As you know, we shrank our private fund business because we didn't like the economics. Because it was primarily kind of names like you just mentioned who were kind of owned the client and we were doing all the work and creating all the value add. And so we shifted towards doing it with our own capital because the returns are so big. But in the last couple of years, we've managed to, you know, both kind of do value add, and then when we finish value add, we'll actually sell on the asset and in many cases take an asset management contract that's 10 years or 12 years long at pretty good economics. And so we put more resources into what you described. The way we've been handling it up to this point is not kind of sitting around with capital on call, but we have now a number of, and we've done, you know, we never get to use their names, but we've done these transactions with really big domestic and global institutions who are effectively kind of we have an ongoing relationship with that we regularly kind of talk with them about want to do things. And so the capital is not sitting in an on-call vehicle. The capital is sitting with institutional investors who trust us, who have been doing business with us, in many cases have ongoing asset management relationship with us. So I think we can drive kind of an outcome similar to what you suggested without having the structure kind of established. It's a wordy question as to whether or not we go through that process. Are we willing to do that? Of course we're willing to do that. And certainly, if we're going to do something big in hotels, we're going to do it with partner capital. We're not going to wear a bunch of risk only ourselves. So precisely the structure you describe of doing it and through some sort of asset management vehicle with performance upside for us is going to be the way that we're going to play this.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Happy to take any questions or input from anybody. Again, it's star one. Okay. I think we're done. Thank you, everybody. We're grateful for your time. We're just going to keep on working it. So we look forward to deliver results above the bottom of our forecast and up to the top and hopefully to the top. So thank you. Thank you, everybody. Take care. Be safe.